Dear Miles Hammond, the Murder Club is to hold a dinner at Beltring's restaurant in Soho on Friday next at 8:30 p.m. Our speaker will be Chief Superintendent Hadley to tell us the story of an intriguing and unsolved mystery which I think might interest you. I realize you're not a member of the club. Perhaps you'd care to come along as my guest.
Dear Dr. Fell, thanks for your invitation, which I have much pleasure in accepting. As I probably told you, I shall be in town later this week, interviewing applicants for a secretarial post, so it'll suit me very well. After a lifetime study of the history of crime, my late uncle has bequeathed his library to me, and I have now acquired a house full of sinister and bloodthirsty tales. So the Murder Club will be an appropriate meeting place.
We present Donald Sinden as Dr. Gideon Fell in He Who Whispers by John Dixon Carr.
Notes made by me, Gideon Fell, June 18th, 1937. Concerning a particularly cruel and horrific murder. A crime so evil and so shocking, it seemed to be literally inhuman. And when Miles Hammond arrived at Beltring's restaurant, he too was in for a shock.
Oh, you made me jump. Who? What are you doing here?
I'm looking for Beltring's restaurant. Have I come to the wrong place? This looks more like a bar.
The restaurant's through there, but it's not open to the public tonight. There's a meeting going on. At least there should be.
I know. The Murder Club. That's why I'm here.
Oh, really? So am I. Perhaps we should introduce ourselves. I'm Barbara Morell. Who are you?
Miles Hammond. How do you do?
Hammond? You're not a member of the club, are you?
No, I'm a guest of Dr. Gideon Fell.
Oh, that's funny. So am I. But the weird part is, not a single member has turned up tonight. The whole club seems to have disappeared.
Disappeared?
There's no one here except you and me, and a policeman called Hadley. Frederic, the head waiter, is absolutely frantic. And now the... Oh, Frederic.
Oui, mademoiselle.
What's happening? Don't tell me the policeman's disappeared as well.
The chief superintendent is using the telephone. He is trying to call the president of the club, but I think he is having some difficulty.
What are you laughing at?
I was just thinking this would make a real scoop for some lucky reporter. On the night of the Murder Club meeting, all the members are found sitting quietly at home with knives in their backs.
That's not funny. You're not a journalist, are you?
No, why?
I thought not. Then you've been reading too many detective stories. As it happens, I am a journalist.
Well, that's all I need. For years, Gideon Fell has been trying to persuade me to come and talk to this club. And for years I've said, no, I don't want to be misreported in the press. And he always tells me there are no journalists here. So tonight I finally turn up to find a journalist and no murder club. Unless perhaps you...
Sorry, I'm not a member either. My name's Hammond.
Of course, the doctor told me you're Sir Charles Hammond's nephew. You and your sister have inherited a library.
That's why I'm in London. I've been interviewing possible secretaries to help me get the library sorted out. And Dr. Fell invited me. Perhaps we ought to give him a ring.
Well, I tried that. The president's out of town and the doctor isn't at home either. It seems there'll be no dinner tonight, so we may as well give up and go...
Excuse me, Superintendent, but... Do we have to? I mean, Frederic says all the tables are laid and the chef's waiting in the kitchen. Couldn't you tell us about the unsolved mystery anyway? I've been looking forward to it so much. Couldn't we, please?
Well, I don't know. I mean, how about it, Frederic?
Mademoiselle, monsieur, dinner is served.
According to Hadley, the dinner was excellent. Too good, he said, to be treated as the mere background to a mystery story. Or perhaps he was afraid the details might spoil their appetites. But at last, over coffee, he began the strange tale of the Brook family. Although they were typically English, they lived in France, not far from Chartres. Mr. Brook owned a tannery on the outskirts of the city, producing a high-quality leather. As Hadley explained, he met them by chance 6 years ago while he was on holiday.
Yes, I'd only been there a few days. I happened to meet Howard Brooke whilst I was changing some money at his bank, and we got into conversation. He invited me back to the chateau. It had a perfect setting, beside the river, and there was an old tower by the water's edge with a crumbling stone staircase spiralling up to a lookout platform at the top. I shall never forget that tower as long as I live.
Why?
Hang on. I've set the stage. Let me describe the characters. Brooke was in his 50s, his wife a few years younger, and they had one son, Parry, in his 20s. Brooke wanted the boy to take over the family business when he retired, but Harry had other ideas. His dream was to go to Paris and study painting. There were plenty of arguments about that, I can tell you. A waste of breath, as it turned out. They're all dead now, anyway.
What's the matter? You're shivering.
No, it's nothing. There must be a draught from the door. Please, go on.
But still, they seem to be happy enough until...
Until?
A newcomer arrived from England. Howard Brooke's personal secretary, Miss Fay Seton.
Fay Seton? What was she like?
Very intelligent. And very beautiful. Of course, Harry fell for her and asked her to marry him. At first, she refused him, but he was very determined, and presently she changed her mind. His parents weren't any too pleased about that.
Perhaps they wanted someone better for their son.
No, it wasn't that. Look, here's a photo of her. Though black and white doesn't do her justice, she had hazel eyes, a creamy complexion, and auburn hair. Now, tell me, can you see anything wrong in that face?
What do you mean, wrong?
Well, there were certain rumours. Some people believe she was dangerous. In spite of that, Harry and Fay announced their engagement. And that was when Mrs. Brooke phoned my hotel and begged me to come at once. She was afraid something terrible was about to happen. When I got there, she told me her husband was desperate to put a stop to the marriage. So desperate, he'd drawn £2,000 from the bank. He was about to have a showdown with the girl and try to buy her off.
Just because of some stupid gossip?
No, it wasn't only gossip. A family at a neighbouring farm had a 15-year-old son. And apparently he and the young woman were... Well, anyhow, Brooke had arranged to meet Fay at the top of the old tower.
Where was Harry during all this?
Mrs. Brooke said he was in his room writing letters. But when I got to the tower, Fay was in the doorway looking very pale. She was obviously upset.
Well, why? What was wrong?
She told me Harry and his father were both up above. She'd heard them having a furious argument. Then she brushed past me and disappeared into the woods.
What did you do?
I climbed the corkscrew staircase as fast as I could and found them at the top of the tower. Brooke was wearing a raincoat. It looked as if a storm was about to break. He had a bulging briefcase propped up against the parapet beside his walking stick, and they were both talking at once so angrily they didn't notice me at first.
That must have been an awkward moment.
When Howard saw me, he pulled himself together and said he was waiting for his secretary. They had some business to discuss and sent us both away.
Harry went with you?
Well, we had no alternative. By the time we got down the stairs, it had started to rain. We sheltered under the arch of the doorway, waiting for it to stop, and then...
Go on.
We heard a heavy thud, echoing down the stairwell. When we got to the roof, Brooke was lying face down, the back of his raincoat oozing blood from a stab wound below his left shoulder. His walking stick was in two pieces. I hadn't realized it was actually a sword stick, and there were blood stains on the blade. But the briefcase containing the £2,000 had vanished into thin air.
What did you do?
We eased him into a sitting position, and Harry gasped, "Dad, who was it? Who did this?" The old man opened his mouth and tried to speak, but he was too far gone. He died in his son's arms a few minutes later.
But who killed him? Was it Fay Seton?
I told you. I saw her leave the tower 10 minutes earlier. Howard Brooke had been alone up there.
Are you trying to tell us the crime was committed by some supernatural creature floating through the air?
Look, it's strange you should say that. You're not the first person to suggest it. There are a lot of weird superstitions in that part of France.
But what happened next? Did the police arrest Fay Seton?
Pardon, Superintendent. I'm sorry to interrupt, but there is a telephone call for you.
Would you excuse me? I'll tell you the rest later, as far as I can, at least. I shan't be long.
When he left them, there was a long silence. Barbara and Miles were both wrestling with the story they'd heard. Eventually, Miles spoke up.
Penny for them.
Sorry?
A penny for your thoughts.
Well, to be honest, I don't know what to say.
Suppose I say it for you. It strikes me you're a lot more interested in Faye Seaton than you are in the murder club.
Perhaps. But so are you. You keep staring at that photo. You're fascinated by it, aren't you?
Well, yes, I suppose I am, in a way.
And you're wondering what it would be like to fall in love with her.
In love? Oh, for heaven's sake, we don't even know whether she's still alive.
No, that's true. Mr. Haddon never told us that. When he comes back, we must...
The chief superintendent asked me to tell you the telephone call is from Dr. Fell. He is on his way and will be arriving shortly.
Oh, well, goodbye, Mr. Hammond. It's been very nice to meet you, but I must be going now.
You can't do that. The old boy would be a bit annoyed if he turned up and found you weren't here.
Not half as annoyed as if he found I was here. Excuse me, I really can't stop.
No, wait!
But she was already out of the door. Miles asked the head waiter to make his apologies and dashed after her, down the stairs and out of the building, just in time to see her hailing a cab at the corner of Frith Street.
Hang on! Where are you going?
Home, of course. Let go of my arm.
And where's home?
Earl's Court. Now, will you please let me go?
Couldn't be better. My hotel's in Kensington. I'll drop you off on the way. Whereabouts in Earl's Court?
Redcliffe Square.
Okay, driver. Redcliffe Square and then the Royal Park Hotel.
We can't both rush off like this. It's terribly rude.
Don't worry. When I get in, I'll ring up and explain.
Explain? What is there to explain?
I was hoping you'd tell me. After all, you arranged all this, didn't you?
I don't know. What do you mean?
Somehow you cancelled that dinner tonight and put all the guests off except Hadley because you wanted to hear the story about Faye Seaton alone, right?
Right. I found out the members' names and addresses and rang them all, pretending I was Dr. Fell's secretary, and said the dinner had been postponed. Then I rang Dr. Fell, as the president's secretary, and told him the same thing.
But surely the doctor must have recognized your voice.
I don't even know Dr. Fell. I lied about that, too.
But why, for heaven's sake?
Oh, it's too complicated now, but how long are you staying in town? If we could meet tomorrow, perhaps, I could explain.
Sorry, I have to go back to the country in the morning. My sister and her fiancé are coming up to do some shopping, and I'm going back on the train with them. But I'll be in London at the weekend.
So we can meet then?
Yes, I'd like that.
After Miles dropped Miss Morell off at Earl's Court, he went on to the Royal Park Hotel. But when he asked the desk clerk for his key...
Good evening, sir. I have a message for you.
Oh, what's that?
Let me see. Here it is. A young lady telephoned earlier. She said you'd applied to an employment agency for a librarian to do some cataloguing.
I did. They promised to send someone at 4 o'clock. I waited until nearly 7, but she never turned up, so I...
Oh, she was very sorry. She'd been held up. She wondered if you could see her tomorrow morning instead.
Yes, I think I can manage that. Did she leave a name?
Yes, sir. The name is Seaton. Miss Faye Seaton.
The following afternoon, Miles met his sister, Marion, and Steve, her fiancé, in the buffet at Waterloo Station. He did out plenty of time before they caught the train, because he had something to tell them.
I'm sorry, Miles. I don't understand. Who is this Miss Seaton? I've never heard of her.
Nor have I. Perhaps it would be easier if you began at the beginning, old man.
Very well. 6 years ago in France, she was involved in a murder case. Local people had accused her of immoral behaviour, and then her employer was found dead in mysterious circumstances.
Really? Well, I'm sure that's very interesting, but why are you telling us?
Because I met her this morning. I've engaged her to come to Greywood with us to catalogue the books.
You're not serious.
I really believe he is. What made you do a thing like that?
I don't know. I've made up my mind to have nothing to do with her. Then she told me she had trained as a librarian. No wonder Hadley at the murder club gave me an odd look when I said I needed someone to sort out the library.
Did you say the murder club?
Yes, that's when I first met her. Superintendent Hadley was involved in the case at the time. This morning I met her and, well, now I've hired her, so she'll be travelling down with us. I thought I should tell you first.
Well, thanks, but as
I suppose she spun you a heart-rending story and played on your sympathies.
Look, I'm trying to tell you
something. Far from it. She doesn't even know I've heard about the murder. We simply talked about the job, that's all.
Will somebody please listen?
That's right, darling. Try and make him see sense.
No, Miles must do whatever he thinks is right. But the thing is, I'm not coming down to Greywood this evening.
What? I thought you said...
Well, I kept trying to tell you in the taxi, but you never listened. There's a crisis at the office. I can't leave things in a mess. We'll get it sorted out tonight, and then I'll come down first thing tomorrow. Sorry, but needs must.
Oh, well. What time train?
I'll catch the 7:30. And don't you dare mess about with the kitchen boiler. I know, it's little ways.
Yes, all right. But I want to hear some more about this girl. Tell me about her.
I think you'll like her. But you won't mention any of this, will you? Don't say anything that might bring up the past. She's been through a very bad time.
Oh, of course. Actually, I'm rather glad she'll be there to help me get the house straight. You know, I think I'll let her have my bedroom. The guest room needs a spring clean, and I can sleep in the garden room. Oh, I've always thought it must be lovely to wake up and walk straight out.
There you go. You ask Miles to tell us about the girl, and then you never let him get a word in edgeways.
Oh, sorry. Go on. Tell us about her.
I'll try. But anyway, you'll soon see for yourself. She's going to meet us at the platform.
I wish I'd been there when Miles introduced Faye to Marion. Two charming ladies, not dissimilar in age and upbringing, yet on a deeper level, totally different. However, they seemed to get on very well. The journey passed pleasantly enough, and by the time they reached Greywood, they'd become friends. After supper, Faye insisted on helping with the washing up, and then Miles showed her the library, with books piled from floor to ceiling.
I did warn you, didn't I? It's going to be a very long job.
I shall enjoy it. And your sister has been so kind. I feel at home here already.
Oh, yes. Marion will make sure you're comfortable.
She offered to move out of her bedroom and let me have it. But I said I wouldn't dream of it. I'd sooner be on the ground floor anyway.
Oh, why's that?
Oh, no special reason. I just feel more comfortable. And the garden's so lovely, and the air smells so good.
Yes, you'll notice the difference, coming from London. You'll sleep like a log tonight.
I hope so.
Why? Do you find it difficult to sleep?
Sometimes.
Mind you, it can be awkward. A friend of my uncle coming down by car actually fell asleep at the wheel, ran smack into a tree. Luckily, he wasn't badly hurt, but it could have been very nasty.
Yes. That's how Harry Brooke was killed, in a car crash.
What?
You know all about me, don't you?
I suppose Marion told you. I asked her not to.
She didn't say it in so many words, but she hinted. I just wanted to tell you how grateful I am for giving me this job. I was nearly sent to the guillotine for Mr. Brooke's murder. But how did you get to hear about it?
Someone called Hadley from Scotland Yard told me.
Ah, in the end, it was Mr. Hadley who persuaded the French police that there was no evidence against me. I'll always be grateful to him. And now he's helped me again. We kept in touch. And when he heard through Dr. Fell that you were looking for someone to catalogue a library, he suggested I should apply for the job.
I see. I never realised.
Of course. But I don't want there to be any secrets between us. And I didn't kill Mr. Brooke.
I'm sure you didn't.
Harry and I were going to be married. Until someone started spreading nasty rumours about me. I think Mr. Brooke got some anonymous letters. He asked me to meet him privately at the Tower. I didn't know he'd been to the bank and drawn out £2,000 to bribe me. Harry didn't know that either. He'd been up in his room, writing a letter. He wrote every week to Jim Morrell, an old friend for me.
Morrell? No relation to Barbara Morrell, by any chance?
Oh, I've no idea. Harry never mentioned her. Why?
It doesn't matter. Sorry I interrupted. Please, go on.
Well, I thought Harry was still in his room. But when I reached the Tower, I heard him and his father up above, quarrelling.
That must have been when you met Hadley in the doorway.
Yes. I didn't want to get involved in a family row, so I went for a walk through the woods. I didn't find out what had happened until I came back to the house about an hour later, and Harry came out to meet me saying that someone had killed his father. It wasn't me. You do believe that, don't you?
Of course.
Anyway, eventually, the police decided it was suicide.
Suicide?
Mr. Brooke's fingerprints were the only ones on the sword stick. You know about the sword stick?
Yes.
The police surgeon said it would have been almost impossible from the position of the wound. But there was no other evidence, so they had to let me go.
But what about the briefcase full of money? Hadley said it had disappeared.
They thought in his struggle Mr. Rook had knocked it over the parapet into the river. It was never found. The whole business created a sensation. And then Harry was killed in the car crash, and a month later Mrs. Brooke died too. She was so heartbroken. They said she died of grief.
Do you two have any idea what time it is?
Marion, for goodness sake.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was my fault. I hadn't realised it was so late, and I want to start work early tomorrow. But before I go to bed, I've got a little something for you, Marion, to thank you for being so kind and welcoming.
Oh, heavens, you don't have to do that.
But I want to. It won't take a moment. It's in my suitcase. I'll go and get it now before I start unpacking.
Well, I must say, she's behaving like the perfect guest.
But you still don't like her, do you?
I never said that. I do like her, only...
Only what?
There's something about her. I can't explain it. I just feel you should be careful, very careful.
Listen, I have no personal interest in Face Eaton, if that's what you're worried about. I'm interested in an unsolved mystery, that's all.
Yes, that's the part that worries me. All that nonsense about murderous demons floating through the air. I'll believe it when I see one, that's all I can say.
And suppose you did see one, what would you do?
A sinister face floating outside my window. Oh, I'd probably take a pot shot at it with my revolver. Steve insists I have some sort of protection whenever I'm alone here, so he...
Hello. What's that?
A car at this time of night? Who on earth?
It's the taxi from the village. There's someone getting out. Good Lord!
Who is it?
An old friend of mine. Dr. Gideon Fell.
I apologized twice for my arrival, since I was not only extremely late, but also uninvited. Marion Hammond offered to make up a bed for me, but I told her that I would be returning to London by the last train. The cab driver had agreed to wait until I was ready to go back to the station. I could see Marion was very tired, and she admitted she was feeling drowsy. Then she said good night and went up to bed. Naturally, Miles wanted to know the reason for my unexpected arrival. And when I explained that Hadley had telephoned me late that afternoon to tell me about the mysterious events at the murder club, he decided that we both needed a drink. Don't drown it.
How's that?
Ah, that's splendid. You're very good health. That's better.
Now, would you mind telling me what all this is about?
Not at all. I'm very glad to have had the opportunity to meet your sister. Charming young lady.
Yes, she is. But I don't imagine you came all this way just to compliment me on my relatives.
Not entirely, no. I admit there is another member of this household who arouses my curiosity.
You mean Face Eaton?
I do indeed.
How did you know she was here?
Well, let's say I thought it was highly probable. You're employing her as your librarian, I presume?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Miss Barbara Morell also telephoned me today to apologize for upsetting our arrangements last night. And to tell me Faye Seaton was in London. She even had her address. And now Faye is here, under your roof. I must see her. There's one particular question I have to put to her. And I must also warn you...
Oh, that... for heaven's sake, not you two. Look, I've already talked to her about Howard Brooks' murder. She told me she didn't kill him, and I believe her.
Did she also tell you that after the inquest, a mob of local farmhands were threatening to lynch her?
What? I know there were vague rumours about her carrying on with some local...
The rumours were not vague. Young Pierre Frenek had been ill. In his delirium, he had a nightmare. He dreamed he saw a white face floating outside his attic window. But next morning, when his father woke the boy, he saw tooth marks on his throat where the blood...
That's ridiculous. They actually believed that Faye was...
They believed in vampires. In the undead. Those were the accusations made in the anonymous letters sent to Howard Brooke. That was why he tried to break his son's engagement and buy her off. And that is why he died.
Are you telling me you believe that vampires exist?
I certainly believe in the existence of evil, which is why I warn you to be on your guard. Evil forces have struck once. They could strike again. So, before I leave tonight...
You're not leaving. We'll talk about this in daylight and let a little sanity into it. And tomorrow morning, when Marion hears the rest of the story...
You've already told your sister about it.
Oh, of course.
In fact, I asked her what she would do if she met a supernatural horror floating in midair.
And what did she say?
She said she'd probably fire a revolver at it. Anyhow, this question you've got to put to Faye. If it's really important, I'll go and fetch her.
What?
Dear God! Marion!
When Miles switched on the light, we found Marion Hammond in her bed. In her hand was a small revolver. Her eyes were glassy and unblinking, her face chalk white. On the bedside table was a photograph of Marion with her fiancé. Happy and carefree, very different from the helpless woman who lay before us. I put my hand to her wrist, hoping to feel a pulse.
Well, is she...
It's very faint, but her heart is still beating. She needs fresh air. Open the window.
Yes, I noticed that strong perfume as soon as we came in.
And there's an open bottle on the dressing table.
Look at this, a bullet hole through the glass. What do you think she saw outside her window?
Never mind that. Is there a local doctor?
Yes, Dr. Gilpin in the village.
It was lucky I'd kept the taxi waiting. Within 10 minutes, the doctor was at Marion's bedside, and with his help, she began to regain consciousness. In the meantime, Miles had gone in search of Faye Seaton. He found her, out in the moonlight, in a grey dressing gown, wandering through the garden like a ghost.
I heard a shot. What happened?
We're not sure. Marion was unconscious with the gun in her hand. I thought she was dead at first.
Yes, I know.
You know?
I'd been asleep, but the shot woke me. I heard you go upstairs, so I slipped on my dressing gown and ran up after you. The bedroom door was open, and when I looked in, I saw... Well, you know what I saw.
You're still trembling.
I should have run upstairs. I have a weak heart. But I never stopped to think, and then when I saw her... What happened? I still don't understand.
Nor do we. She must have been frightened by someone or something outside the window and took a shot at it.
You mean a burglar trying to break in?
Yeah, that's impossible. Look up there. The window's 15 feet from the ground. And yet she saw something and it frightened her so much she nearly died.
Oh, this can't go on. It mustn't go on.
Oh. Good evening. Miss Seaton, I believe. I'm sorry if I startled you.
Faye, this is Dr. Fell, an old friend of mine.
Dr. Gideon Fell? You caught the Six Ashes murderer and the poisoner at Silbury Cross.
You embarrass me, madam. Let's say I'm an old buffer with an unfortunate habit of getting mixed up in murders.
How is Marion?
Dr. Gilpin says she'll recover, but it was a near thing. I understand that you were the last person to speak to Miss Hammond before she lost consciousness.
I was?
Miles told me that you were going to give her a present of some kind.
Oh, that was nothing. Just some French perfume. I thought she might like it.
She did indeed. We found it already open on her dressing table. But during your conversation, she didn't appear to be nervous or apprehensive about anything?
No. Not at all.
Hello there. I wonder where you've got to.
Dr. Gilpin, may I introduce Miss Seaton? She's also staying here.
How do you do?
Please, tell me, how is Miss Hammond?
Well, I'm glad to say she's out of danger, though she needs a rest for a day or two. I'll look in again tomorrow morning to see how she's getting on.
I don't imagine anyone slept very well that night. I know I didn't. But by daylight next morning, everything seemed to be getting back to normal. Until the telephone rang.
Hello?
May I speak to Miles Hammond? My name is Barbara Morell, and...
Barbara, that's amazing. I was going to try and get in touch with you.
Were you? Why?
It's rather complicated, but listen, if I come up to town today, could I possibly see you?
Yes, I suppose so.
There's a train at 9:50. It takes about 2 hours. Where would be a good place to meet?
I'll be at Waterloo to meet your train.
Terrific. I can't go into it all now, but... Well, there was a very nasty business here last night. Hang on, I think there's someone... Dr. Gilpin, is that you?
No, it's me. Morning.
Steve, come in. I'm on the phone, but I won't be a moment. Sorry, where was I?
You said something about last night.
Yes. Something happened in my sister's room that seems beyond belief. Look, we'll talk later.
All right. I'll see you at midday.
Yes, I'll be there. Bye.
What was all that about?
It's all right. Nothing to worry about now, though Marion was in a pretty bad way, but she's okay.
Marion? Why? What's happened?
Someone or something got into her room and scared her half to death. But the doctor says she's going to be...
Oh, my God. It was that damned librarian, I suppose.
What do you mean?
When you told us about her, I had a sort of premonition.
Some people stir up trouble wherever they go. Where's Marion now?
Up in her room, still asleep.
Oh, I must see her.
Birch.
Sorry.
It's my fault entirely.
Let me introduce you. Steve Curtis, Marion's fiancé, Dr. Fell.
How do you do?
Yes, of course. You started all this. You and your damned murder club.
Sorry about that. I just told him about Marion. He's very upset, naturally.
Yeah, of course, of course.
It's my fault. I brought Faye Seaton here. You heard what he said. Some people stir up trouble wherever they go.
Yes, I heard. But before you blame yourself, hadn't we better be sure that Miss Seaton is the troublemaker?
I don't understand.
Last night you asked me if I believed in vampires. Well, I might possibly accept a vampire who materialized in broad daylight and killed with a sword stick, but I could never believe in a vampire who pinched a briefcase with £2,000 in it.
Never mind all that. What about last night? Whatever it was that terrified Marion...
Yes, that was different. That was the real touch of Satan. But those two events, the murder at the tower and the frightening of your sister, are connected. I don't know how or why. I propose to question Miss Seaton, though I fear it won't do much good. The best thing would be for you to get in touch with Barbara Morell.
I am in touch with her. She rang me a few minutes ago, and I've arranged to go up to town and meet her later on.
Have you, by Jove? Well, now we're getting somewhere. Did you ask her about Jim Morell?
No, but I'm going to see her.
Good morning, Mr. Hammond.
Dr. Fell.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Before I go up to see the patient, I wonder if I might have a word.
Of course.
Would you say your sister was a highly strung, nervous type of person?
No, not at all.
No, I thought not. And she doesn't suffer at all from what you might call hallucinations?
Oh, good Lord, no. What gave you that idea?
Well, last night she kept muttering about someone who whispered in her ear. It distressed her very much.
Oh, whispered? But surely a whisper...
Quite. It struck me as very odd. She kept referring to it again and again. Oh, perhaps this morning she'll be able to clarify it a little. Oh, and when I've seen her, I'd like to see the other lady, Miss Seaton. Last night she looked alarmingly pale. Not as much blood colour as she should have. Anyway, we'll talk again later.
Whispers? Dr. Fell, do you know the answer to all this?
Alas, no. Except, of course, the vampire legend.
Vampires again. What have they got to do with it?
Nothing, probably. Except that in folklore, the vampire whispers softly to her victims to put them in a trance. I seem to remember a story about Cagliostro.
Who?
Count Cagliostro, the 18th century wizard, prophet, alchemist. He gave a dinner party once and summoned the ghosts of 6 great men from the shadows to sit down to dine with 6 living guests. According to his biographer, at first conversation did not flow freely, which might be rather an understatement. He also attended another eerie party in London at the Old King's Head in Soho. Oddly enough, not far from the restaurant where you met Barbara Morell. Oh, Lord. Oh, Bacchus.
What's the matter?
I think I got it. I know what frightened your sister, and it was done by design, by deliberate, brutal design. I'm going to find Miss Seaton, and this time I'm going to get the truth out of her. Mr. Curtis, we meet again.
Come in, Steve. You've seen Marion. How is she?
She's still a bit under the weather. Gilpin's with her now. By the way, Doctor, I'm sorry I lost my temper just now, but I'd had a bit of a shock.
Yes, perfectly natural. I understand. Now, if you'll excuse me, I want to have that word with Miss Seaton.
First door on the left.
I wouldn't mind a few words with her myself. What the hell were you thinking of, bringing her into this house?
Pull yourself together. Marion's going to be all right.
Well, no thanks to you. You don't give a damn about your sister, do you? All you care about is that infernal little slut you picked up out of the gutter.
For God's sake, calm down. What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I don't know what came over me. I'm going for a walk. Maybe the fresh air will clear my head. By the by, what's Dr. Fell doing here anyway? And what does he want with your precious librarian?
He's simply trying to find out what's going on.
Unfortunately, I was too late. Miss Seaton has gone.
Gone? Why? What's happened?
She left this on her pillow. It's addressed to you.
Dear Mr. Hammond, I'm afraid I have to go up to London on an urgent matter that needs my attention. Perhaps it's just as well I kept on my little room in town. And a briefcase might be useful, too. But don't worry, I shall return before nightfall.
I should have guessed. Presumably, she'll be going to London by train.
I suppose so. There's the 9:50. That's the one I meant to take to meet Barbara. They must have caught the bus at the end of the lane a few minutes ago.
Ring for a taxi. You've got to be on that train. I warn you here and now, if that young woman carries out her plan, something damnable is going to happen. You must catch that train.
You'd better go up and say goodbye to Marion before you leave. I'll ring for a cab, don't worry.
Miles caught the train with 30 seconds to spare and immediately set out to find Faye Seaton. But although he went through every coach, he drew a blank. She was not on board. When he reached Waterloo, Barbara Morell was waiting for him at the barrier.
Hello. Did you have a good journey?
No, I didn't. I mean, thank you for coming to meet me, but, oh, Lord, everything's gone wrong.
What do you mean?
We thought Faye would be on the train. Dr. Fell said I had to find her. Everything depended on it, and now I don't know what to do because she wasn't on it.
But she was. I saw her just now. She came through the barrier about a half a minute before you did.
That's impossible. I searched the whole train. Hey. I thought you'd never met her. How did you recognize her?
From the photo Mr. Happy showed us, remember?
Oh, yes, of course. Which way did she go?
I've no idea. There were so many people about her.
Hang on. Dr. Fell said you knew her address.
Yes. She lives in Camden Town, 5 Bolsover Place.
What's the quickest way to get there?
By underground.
Right. What are we waiting for?
I don't want to keep pestering you with questions, but what's so urgent about finding her?
Does the name Jim Morell mean anything to you?
Of course. He's my brother, but you can't possibly connect Jim with any of this. He's in Canada. He's been living there for years. How did you hear his name?
Faye Seaton said Harry Brooke used to write to him.
Oh, yes. Jim knew that unspeakable swine.
But I thought everyone seemed to like Harry.
Oh, yes. Good old Harry. Jolly good chap. Only I know a few things about Harry Brooke and about Faye Seaton.
Now, look, I don't care what you say. I happen to believe in Faye Seaton. Everyone thinks I'm mad. You weren't the only person who warned me against her.
I did nothing of the sort. I wasn't trying to warn you. I was hoping you might be able to help her.
I only wish I could, but...
Faye Seaton is the most terribly wronged person I ever heard of. As for those... things she was accused of, the immorality, the absurd superstitions. They were a deliberate frame-up from start to finish.
I felt that all along. But who'd want to do anything so...
Harry, of course. That charming young man was a cruel, ruthless devil determined to get his own way.
Hello, this is Camden Town, quick.
But it was too late. Absorbed in conversation, they'd missed their stop and had to travel on to Kentish Town. As they walked back, Barbara filled in the details.
You know Harry was set on becoming a painter in spite of his parents' wishes?
Yes, but what's that got to do with anything?
It had to do with everything. He was afraid if he simply left home, they'd cut him off without a penny. So he had to devise a scheme that would force them to let him go. That's when Faye arrived on the scene and he pretended to fall in love with her.
Pretended?
At the same time, he started a whispering campaign against her. He even bribed a 15-year-old boy to scratch his own throat and tell some nightmare tale about vampires. And he sent his father anonymous letters, hinting at some terrible secrets in her past, so his parents would beg him to break off the engagement. The plan was he'd finally come to them, shedding crocodile tears, and say, "All right, if I give her up, will you send me to Paris for 2 years so I can try to forget her?"
How do you know all this?
He was so proud of his scheme, he couldn't resist writing to my brother and telling him how clever he'd been.
And you knew about it at the time?
No, that was 6 years ago, before Jim emigrated. Then one morning, he was reading the paper and he said, "My God, old man Brooke's been killed." But he never told me what he knew about Harry. And a few months later, he went to Canada.
So how did you find out about Harry's plan and Faye?
After Jim left, I spring-cleaned his room. And I found all Harry's letters in the waste paper basket. I shouldn't have read them, but I did. And I kept this one. I always carry it with me. Look, it's the last letter Harry sent to Jim, the day his father died. His writing's awful. Let me read you the last page.
Go on.
Here we are. "Something terrible has just happened. Someone killed Dad. He was alone at the top of the tower, but someone stabbed him. God knows how. must get this in the post quickly. For God's sake, don't tell anyone what I've been telling you. If Faye went mad and killed the old boy, I don't want anyone to know I've been spreading gossip about her. It wouldn't look good. I never meant anything like this to happen. Yours in haste, H.B.
So she isn't guilty. She isn't guilty of anything, and yet somehow or other she believes she's damned forever. I'm certain of that. What's worse, she's in danger. We must find her before it's too late.
Don't worry. Here we are. Number 5.
As they entered the house, a stale, mildewy smell broke over them like a wave. A woman on the ground floor told them where to find Faye, and they climbed the steep, uncarpeted stairs to the second floor landing.
Who is it?
Hello, Faye.
What are you doing here? Did you follow me?
I had to. You may be in danger.
You startled me. Who's that with you?
Hello, Miss Seaton.
This is Barbara Morell, Jim Morell's sister. She's very anxious to meet you. In fact, she...
He stopped short as he saw, lying on a side table, an old briefcase, dried and cracked, still bulging, but with the flap open. And beside it was a wad of banknotes, stained with rusty brown patches.
Oh, yes. They're bloodstains. Mr. Brooks' blood got on them when he...
Faye, for God's sake.
I shouldn't be here. I'm not needed. Miles, I'll leave you and Miss Seaton.
No, please. Come in, both of you, and close the door. Thank you. And perhaps you'd switch the light on. I'll just draw the curtains. We don't want anyone across the street to spy on us.
But the briefcase, the money, I don't understand. You can't be guilty. We have proof of that. The accusations against you are trumped up by Harry Brooke.
Oh, yes. I've known that all along.
Then why didn't you say so at the time?
Because... Oh, what difference does it make now?
What difference? But the damned briefcase. Is the rest of the money still there?
Of course. I only stole it. I didn't spend any of it.
I have no right to ask, but what else is inside it?
Who's there?
Superintendent Hadley, Metropolitan Police. Mr. Morell, Mr. Hammond, good afternoon. And Miss Seaton. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
What are you doing here?
I had a call from Dr. Fell. He told me what happened at Greywood last night and asked me to keep an eye on you.
It's all right, Faye. The doctor's concerned for your safety.
He's concerned for everyone's safety. He also asked me to put a question to you, Miss Seaton. I understand that last night, after you heard the shot, you went upstairs to Miss Hammond's room. You found Dr. Fell and Mr. Hammond already there. Then you turned and ran away. Apparently you saw something there which upset you very much.
Did I? I don't remember.
I'm afraid I find that difficult to believe. You saw something that shocked you so much you ran out of the house hardly knowing what you were doing. Why not tell us what you...
At that instant, though no one touched the switch by the door, the light went out. With heavy curtains across the windows, they were plunged into darkness. The door opened, and something rushed into the room.
What the...
No, don't!
I'll open the curtain!
Faye, are you all right?
It's gone, the briefcase! It's gone! I must get it back!
Before Miles could stop her, she rushed past him, out of the door and down the stairs. In her headlong fright, she didn't notice the briefcase, which had been tossed aside on the landing. Miles picked it up and called after her over the banisters.
It's all right, Faye. The briefcase is here, and the money's still inside it. Nothing else except a few bits of stone.
Never mind. Miss Seaton, come back. God, come and give me a hand.
At the bottom of the stairs, Faye Seaton lay very still. Her face had a deathly pallor.
Is she all right?
I don't know yet. I seem to remember she has a weak heart.
Yes.
Call an ambulance. She shouldn't have tried to run like that. I think it's finished.
Several hours later, Miles and Barbara were still waiting for news from the hospital.
She may recover, you know.
Yes. I just wish I could understand. She knew all along that the slanders, the anonymous letters, were all the work of Harry Brooke. So why didn't she tell anyone?
Perhaps she still loved him, in spite of everything. I don't know.
Neither do I. Why is Hadley keeping us here? Why can't we go to the hospital?
Who is it?
It's only me. Hello, Miles. And Miss Morell, I believe. Gideon Fell.
Dr. Fell? Oh, I'm so sorry about the other night, the restaurant.
Don't give it another thought. When Hadley rang and told me what had happened, I caught the next train. I've just come from the hospital.
You've seen her? How is she?
She's alive. I can't tell you much more than that. How long she lives depends upon her will to live. But I have to tell you, Faye Seaton is a doomed woman.
I know she's innocent. This is the letter Harry Brooke wrote to Jim Morell on the day his father was killed.
Thank you.
You'll see, he admits he manufactured all the malicious stories about Faye. The whole thing was a pack of lies.
And yet a crime was committed.
Two crimes have been committed. And they were both the work of the same person. The first was unpremeditated and slapdash. The second was planned and wickedly evil.
Do you mean you know who killed Howard Brooke?
Oh, yes. When he returned from the bank with the money intended for Faye, he went up to his son's room. Harry wasn't there, but he found an unfinished letter on the desk. This letter, containing a resume of Harry's scheme. You can imagine how he must have felt. Then he went to the tower to keep his appointment with Faye. I believe he wanted to apologize to her, but he never had the chance.
Go on.
When Harry heard his father had been to his bedroom, he guessed he must have read the letter. He pulled on his coat, now don't forget there was a storm threatening, and hurried to the tower. When Faye arrived, the two men were quarreling. She heard how Harry had used her to carry out his plan, and went away completely shattered. Then Harry lost his temper, snatched up the sword stick, stabbed his father, and then they heard Hadley entering the tower. Mr. Brooke's immediate instinct was to cover up for his son. He tore off his raincoat, which was ripped and stained with blood, and told Harry to give him his coat. Then bundled up his own coat and stuffed it into the briefcase.
So that's what made it look so bulky. I never understood how a few packets of notes filled out like that.
Oh, quite so. By the time Hadley reached the top of the tower, Mr. Brooke thought he had prevented a family scandal. He told Hadley to take his son away. But when they left, he realized that he might be dying. There was only one thing to be done. As his strength ebbed away, he exchanged the two coats once more and stuffed Harry's coat, which must have had bloodstains on the lining, into the briefcase, weighed it down with a few lumps of stone, and dropped it over the parapet, and then collapsed. The two men down below heard him fall and hurried upstairs, and he died in his son's arms, assuring him that everything would be all right. God rest his soul.
But where was Faye during all this?
Yeah, as she was going past the tower, she saw the briefcase fall into the reeds beside the river, and she picked it up. When she found what was in it, the money and the stones, the blood-soaked raincoat, she understood.
I suppose she kept it in case Harry tried to pin the murder on her. His raincoat would have proved he was guilty.
And he got away with murder. His father covered up for him, and so did Faye. By God, I wish I'd met Harry Brooke. I'd like to tell him what I thought of him.
Well, that's not impossible. Would you like to meet him now?
What?
Are you there, Hadley? Would you bring the prisoner in, please? In you go, sir.
This is ridiculous. I tell you, it's all a mistake.
What the devil? Steve! What's going on? Doctor, what are you playing at?
We need to make a formal identification. Because, you see, the man who calls himself Stephen Curtis is, in fact, Harry Brooke.
But, Doctor, I feel as if I'm here under false pretenses after what happened last time in this restaurant. I really don't deserve to be taken out to supper.
Oh, not another word. After what you've been through today, it's the least I can do.
I can't help thinking about Faye and what she's been through this weekend.
Not just this weekend. For years she's gone through her own private hell.
So, how did Harry Brooke become Steve Curtis? I suppose his death in a car crash was just another lie.
No, I think there was a car crash. Somewhere on a lonely French road, I think he found a wrecked car, and the driver, about his own age, dead. He realized it was a golden opportunity and assumed the clothes and papers and identity of the real Stephen Curtis.
Well, it must have been a nasty moment for him when you announced that you'd hired Faye Seaton to come and work for you, Miles. No wonder he had a sudden crisis at the office.
Yeah, but I think he saw another possibility. Faye Seaton still had the evidence that proved he was a murderer. If she were disposed of, there'd be no one left to connect Stephen Curtis with Harry Brooke.
You mean he was planning to kill her?
Miles, you said something about your sister offering to give Faye her bedroom. Now, was Harry Brooke aware of that?
Oh, yes. It was only when we got to Greywood that Faye said she'd prefer to sleep downstairs.
So Harry didn't know that. When he arrived late that night, he expected to find Faye in Marion's room. He didn't turn on the light, but when he caught a whiff of perfume, a perfume that Faye had worn ever since her first visit to France, he remembered that. He planned a very skillful murder, but he got the wrong woman. It wasn't until the next morning that I began to suspect him. You were on the phone to Barbara, remember?
Yes, I started to tell her what was going on.
And you said something happened in my sister's room that seems beyond belief.
And that was when Harry walked in, pretending he'd just arrived on the early train.
And he heard what you said. When you rang off, you told him not to worry. Marion was going to be all right. I was outside, so I didn't see his face, but I heard him say, Marion. He was completely thunderstruck. I wondered why. He already knew something nasty had happened in her room. Who did he think it had happened to? Her great aunt, Agatha?
Sorry to interrupt, but I still don't know what did happen in her room. What was it that frightened her so much? What had she seen?
She didn't see anything.
She must have done. She fired a shot at it.
Oh, no, she didn't. I was mystified at first, but sometime later, when we were discussing Cagliostro, I remembered how he was initiated into a secret society at the King's Head in Soho. He was blindfolded, given a pistol, then told to put it to his temple and pull the trigger, without knowing whether it was loaded or not. When he pulled the trigger, there was a thunderous explosion. But it wasn't loaded. Someone had fired a second gun just behind him. It was a cruel hoax.
And Harry did that to Marion?
While she was asleep. He put an unloaded pistol to her head and kept whispering to her, telling her that she was about to die. She didn't know he had another one loaded with a real bullet. Slowly, he squeezed the trigger. She heard the hammer moving slowly back. And then...
Oh!
I beg your pardon. I got carried away. But just imagine, what would a shock like that do to someone with a weak heart? After that, Harry slipped out of the house and lay low till the following morning.
But, Doctor, when we rushed up to Marion's room, Faye followed us. The door was open and she looked in, and something she saw there terrified her. What was it?
Cast your mind back. On the bedside table, there was a photograph of Marion and her fiancé. That's when Faye knew Harry was still alive. And she realized that the attack had been intended not for Marion, but for her. He had returned from nowhere to take her life.
Which is why she ran away and why he decided to follow her to London.
He was so helpful, wasn't he, Miles? He rang for a taxi. He even came to see you off. And as the train began to pull out, he jumped into another compartment.
But I searched the whole train, looking for Faye.
You were looking for a woman. No doubt he kept a newspaper in front of his face. You wouldn't have given him a second glance.
But I never saw Faye, either.
I think I can explain that. If a train's really crowded, I have a quiet word with the guard. If you ask nicely, they sometimes let you travel in the guard's van.
And of course, Harry didn't know Faye's address, so he followed you two, hoping you'd lead him to her. And you did. She warned him in the note she left that she still had the incriminating briefcase in her possession, and he had to get it back.
He pulled the switch in the fuse box on the landing, and he nearly got away with it. He chucked the briefcase. It was the raincoat he was after. He ran out of the house, still clutching it, slap bang into the officer I'd left outside.
I'd say Marion had a lucky escape. I hope you can explain that to her, Miles.
Oh, yes. But Faye wasn't so lucky. As you said, Mr. Hadley, she's been through hell.
And yet even now, there's some quality in her that won't let her speak out to denounce the man she had once loved. She might only have a few months to live. She's sick at heart, and without hope, but she...
Excuse me.
What's the matter? her?
I'm going to her.
Miles, don't be silly. You hardly know her. Whatever crazy plan you have in mind, it's bound to end in disaster.
I don't care. I'm going to her.
And for the second time, Miles Hammond left Beltring's restaurant, hurried down the stairs, and ran out into the night.
In He Who Whispers by John Dixon Carr, Dr. Gideon Fell was played by Donald Sinden. Chief Superintendent Hadley, John Hartley. Miles Hammond, Christopher Kellum. Barbara Morell, Gemma Saunders. Faye Seaton, Sarah Rice. Marion Hammond, Beth Chalmers. Steve Curtis, David Thorpe. Dr. Gilpin, Paul Gregory. Frederick, the head waiter, Gavin Muir. The hotel desk clerk, Tom George. He Who Whispers was dramatized for radio by Peter Ling and directed by Enid Williams.